for all intents and purposes, I feel like we're in our own playoffs right now, trying to make the playoffs. You know, every game has a takes on a heightened level of importance by nature of having less games. And so we've got opportunities in front of us that we have to maximize in order to gain points to solidify a playoff spot. That's our goal first and foremost.
Penguins coach Mike Sullivan, the Pens in Detroit tonight. Tim Benz with you. The Pittsburgh CityCast starts right now. Bet now from anywhere. Download the app today or go online to betrivers.com. I'll go over some final four bets, the start of baseball season, sprinkle in a little football for you as well. But the Penguins, the focus of our attention today as they play in the Motor City tonight. Brian Metzer in just a little bit to talk Pens with us. The Pens minus 190 tonight to win against the Wings. Oof, nearly 2-1 of the Penguins, especially with Casey DeSmith in net right now. Just too risky of a proposition for me to bet on. If you think they're going to win, you might as well take the puck line at plus 133 and hope for the empty netter at the end of the game. Or take Detroit at plus 160 straight up. There's no hook on the over-under total of just 6 tonight. I lean over, although one thing to keep in mind, it is the price on that. It's minus 121. If you don't want to spend that much, I'm not going to be scared off of it. But if you don't want to spend that much, if you don't like it, the under is paying out at plus 102. Bet Rivers offering a same-game parlay today at plus 170 for the Pens to win straight and for that game to go over 6. That's intriguing to me. In fact, I might just do that. Pens lost 5-4 in a game against Detroit when they first played earlier this season. Pittsburgh, if you remember, had a 4-0 first period lead back in December. So it was a 9-goal result as the Red Wings came storming back to win 5-4. So keep that in mind as these two teams play tonight. Now, as far as the Final Four goes, the NCAA tournament has been a bloodbath for me. Don't listen to me. Don't listen to anyone. It's been carnage for brackets, carnage for bettors, for everybody, especially me. Pushing K-State, Michigan State on the buzzer-beating layup from Marquise Noel, and then having him pass the ball at the end of the game against Florida Atlantic. Those were the two biggest kicks in the crotch for me this past weekend while I was in New York at MSG for the Elite Eight, by the way. Oh, also, I bought a half point in the Princeton game against Creighton to get it up to 10.5. And they lost by 11. That's when I knew March Madness was just going to do nothing but make me mad. And then Miami ruined my Texas futures bet on the drive home. That felt good going across the Pennsylvania Turnpike, listening to that go up in smoke. So everything went wrong for me this weekend when it came to college basketball. Everybody loves UConn now in the Final Four, so I'm going to go against them. They're minus 134 to win the Final Four. Not me. I'll go the other way based on trends. If you're giving me points and you're giving me plus money on Miami, I'll take the Hurricanes to cover 5.5 against UConn, and I'll take them at plus 400 to win the Final Four as well. But like I said, don't listen to me. At this point, I'm just throwing darts. I'll admit it. And FAU, SDSU, San Diego State, they've done nothing but kill me this tournament all tournament long. So whoever I pick in that one is destined to lose. I'm not even going to bother picking it. I'll just back my chips, those that remain anyway, against UConn out of pure spite, since I grew up a Pitt fan in Connecticut, went to Syracuse, so of course I hate UConn, and I'll go with Miami to win the whole thing and maybe get a little plus money back. Up next, let's talk Pirates opening day on Thursday in Cincinnati. The Pirates are plus 8,000 to win the Central, the longest odds on the board. I don't think they're going to win the Central, but I do think they'll finish out of last place. Those odds are basically saying, even though the Pirates might have a slightly better team, the Reds are plus 5,000 because they're more likely to stumble into getting something right, and the Pirates are more likely to stumble into getting it wrong. Like, for instance, if the Pirates are getting it right, they'll figure out a way to screw it up. They won't add to their team. If the Reds are getting it right, they probably will. Now, speaking of the Reds, the Pirates are The Pirates are plus 114 to win on opening day. That makes more sense. Yeah, Pirates plus 114 to win on opening day at Cincinnati. So I say, just for fun, pick the Bucks on opening day. See if you can skip your way into plus money potentially against an equally bad Cincinnati team in game one of the regular season. The Pirates are not the longest team on the board when it comes to gambling odds to win the World Series, if you can believe it. The Buccos are 300-1, but the A's and Nats are 500-1. The Nats 250-1. They're the long shots, longer than the Bucks to win the NL at 150-1. regarding playoff odds. If you want to bet that the Pirates will miss the playoffs, which they will, but if you want to put your money where your mouth is, it's minus 10,000. That's right, 10,000 bucks to win 100. Not exactly a worthwhile risk, is it? Now, the other way, it's plus 1,600 to make the playoffs. Bet 100, win 1,600. I won't be betting in either direction, but I don't see them making the playoffs either. In fact, the Pirates over-under win total right now holding at 67.5. We talked about that a few weeks ago. Over is at minus 125. Under is at minus 103. I'm still going to go with the over. I have the Pirates winning 10 more games this year than last, which gets them to 72. I think that's about right. I have them at about 71, 72 wins, which means about 90 losses. So I like the over in that over-under win projection for the Buccos. Okay, let's get back to hockey and the Penguins. The Penguins, for a moment, have given themselves at least some space to breathe. The teams chasing them for the final Eastern Conference playoff spot are helping out as well. By virtue of the Penguins' electrifying yet excruciating 4-3 regulation win over the Washington Capitals on Thursday, the Pens now have 82 points, good for the conference's second wild card slot with 9 games left to play. Meanwhile, the ninth-place Florida Panthers dropped their fourth consecutive decision Monday night, this time in Ottawa 5-2. That means they're stuck at 79 points with 8 games remaining. The Sabres also lost Monday, a 4-3 shootout defeat at home against the Montreal Canadiens, cellar dwellers in the Atlantic Division. That means Buffalo only gets 1 point, so they are now tied for 10th place with the Senators at 77 apiece. And now would be a good time for the Penguins to cushion those leads as much as possible because the schedule is easing up and the Penguins need to take advantage. The Penguins have 4 games remaining this week. One of them is against the best team in hockey. That's the Bruins. They come to town on Saturday. 119 points leading the NHL, and they're riding a 7-game win streak. So the Penguins better make hay against the other 3 opponents they'll be seeing now, against the Red Wings and throughout the end of the weekend. That's Detroit tonight, Nashville coming to town on Thursday at PPG Paints Arena, and then after the Bruins leave town on Saturday afternoon, the Flyers come calling for a 6 p.m. face-off Sunday evening. None of those teams currently occupy a playoff spot, so those are 6 points the Penguins absolutely should grab. Then again, as we discussed during this week's Madden Monday podcast, should is often the most dangerous word to say out loud when discussing the Penguins. For instance, the Penguins really should beat the San Jose Sharks at home before the All-Star break. The Penguins really should be better in their own division. The Penguins should hold this 4-goal lead against the Red Wings, as we mentioned earlier. The Penguins really should coast to a win in this third period at home against the fill-in-the-blank, Islanders, Capitals, Canadiens, Panthers, Rangers. You know, they nearly lost, did lose, or gave away points in all those games that I just listed when they had leads in the third. How about the Penguins really should beat the Senators when they put up 49 shots? And I think you should be getting the point by now, I hope. The Penguins better take care of business because the schedule will lighten up for the Panthers soon, too. So while the Penguins, I hope, are gobbling up 6 points this week, the Panthers are looking at a game Wednesday against Toronto. That'll be their third game in 4 outings against a team currently in the Eastern Conference playoff bracket. But then starting Thursday in Montreal, Florida will then play 5 games in a row against non-playoff foes before finishing the year with Toronto and the Carolina Hurricanes, who lead the Metro. So again, starting Thursday in Montreal, Florida, 5 games in a row against non-playoff competition. So the Penguins better take advantage of their break in the schedule while they've got it right now. But let's get more details from Brian Metz of the Pittsburgh Penguins Radio Network and get his thoughts on these topics surrounding the Pens and more. You can hear Metz during intermissions on 105.9 The X, the Pens' flagship station. You can hear him post-game on The X after every Penguin game. And you can hear him Saturdays as well with Paul Steigerwald on Pens Live Weekly. Okay, Mets, take us through the range of emotions you felt in that building on Saturday night as the Penguins were blowing a third period lead and then managing to win courtesy of Evgeny Malkin's goal with about 80 seconds left in the clock.
Well, first I'll say it ended with euphoria at the end, just because how could you not get lathered up seeing how excited Gino was? I mean, I can't remember the last time I saw him that jazzed up, Tim, for a goal that he scored. He was just so fired up, and it came against his buddies who, he had dinner with just the night before or that day before the game, whatever it was, the Russian guys from the Caps, and to have it fall away from them when they, in such impressive fashion, got Casey DeSmith making save after save after save. He makes an outstanding save on John Carlson on a 2-on-1 with he and Ovechkin. With the leg, and just a minute plus later, you have the Penguins get the first goal from Ryan Poehling. 3 minutes and so change later, after that save, they're up 2-0, and you're feeling really confident for them. Then they go to the third with a 3-goal lead, and all you see on the broadcast, and I couldn't really hear it, but we're seeing it in front of our eyes at the arena, and ESPN kept showing, well, the Penguins have blown more multi-goal leads in the third period than any team in the league. I think it was 8 times that they've had multi-goal leads and had it slip away. Their third period lead total in general has not been good this season. It's the worst under Mike Sullivan in his tenure as a Penguins head coach. And then they're doing pretty good. You think they're hanging in there. And then everything just seemed to turn with the penalty that Gino took. And I'm not blaming him for it because of the way that it came about. I mean, the guy grabbed his collar of his jersey and really gave him a hard jostling, and he took umbrage with that, and he threw a punch, and I thought there might be 2 penalties, but unfortunately in that situation with the team trailing, they usually get a power play, and that's what happened. And a short time later, the Caps were on the comeback trail. So it went from feeling good to feeling really bad to that euphoric feeling at the end. I just couldn't have been happier for them as a group to win the way they did, especially with the way Casey DeSmith had played. I mean, he has been much maligned this season, Tim. And what was funny was the only reason they had a chance early in that hockey game was due to his play, and whoever was in charge of selecting the 3 stars didn't even give him a star. I know he let up 3 goals still, but he was outstanding, and he doesn't get a sniff. Dylan Strome ends up getting the last star as a member of the Washington Capitals, scoring the tying goal 8.
What would you do in goal moving forward this week?
I think in the next game, for sure, against the Detroit Red Wings, I think I would go with Casey DeSmith again, because every point is just so huge now. Now, that said, we've seen him kind of come down to earth after a performance like that this season, but I would at least give him a chance, because you had a little bit of a layoff in between. It's not like it was back-to-backs or anything where you had to make a hard decision, and Sullivan has proven in the past to ride the hot hand a little bit. So I would play him, and if he loses, then you can go back to Tristan Jarry. I just don't know what to expect with Tristan right now. He was so good in Colorado, then suddenly pulls up lame again, goes up on a game day and tells his coach he can't play, and they got emergency recalls. Tokarski and Hallander, who ends up not even being needed, are flying to Dallas. Tokarski gets there in the second period, essentially. They showed a shot of it on the TV broadcast of him getting to the Stars' home rink. So they would have had to go to an e-bug if something happened early on in that hockey game. But I think just right now, I mean, if you look at the last few starts here, Casey played pretty well. I know he gave up 2 goals in a minute 36 against the Dallas Stars, and that kind of sticks out to me. But they were it was on plays where he was really left out to dry by his teammates, too. So he played his part in it. But for me, he's showing you that he wants to give you the best chance to win a hockey game right now. And you don't know what you're going to get from Tristan Jarry with his health, with where his head's going to be on a given day. He just seems a little bit erratic right now. So I think for me, at least in the next start against Detroit, I go with Casey. And then if he wins that one, then you just keep riding him until he loses one for you.
Detroit, Nashville, Boston, Philadelphia this week. It's a busy 4-game stretch between now and when we speak again, Mets. The Pens got to get 6 out of this, don't they?
Yeah, I think so, Tim. And honestly, I think they really need to try and get them all, and it's going to be hard with the Boston Bruins and Nashville Predators in the middle of the Detroit and Flyers, because Nashville is playing better than they were, and you see Boston being Boston. I thought they would eventually kind of hang it up a little bit here and say, okay, we've got everything locked up, but they just still win every night, and they just look that much better even after the trade deadline with the acquisitions they made, bringing in Orlov and Garnet Hathaway from the Capitals. Hathaway scored his 2nd game-winning goal since he's joined the Bruins already this season. And, of course, you got Tyler Bertuzzi, who's there. I mean, they have so much depth it's probably the deepest team that I can remember in NHL, like in recent history anyway. They've just done so much in terms of making themselves better, and their goaltending is by far the best 1-2 punch in the league right now. So you know that's not an easy one. So all that said, I think six is the best case scenario, but I, if possible, I think six plus is what they're going to need if the other teams start to win some games.
The Penguins honored Ovechkin on the Jumbotron for passing Gordie Howe on the all-time goals list. How'd you feel about that?
I was kind of torn by it. I understand what the league and the Penguins and everybody is trying to do. They want to do, you know, the feel-good vibe and mutual respect and all of this. And they had recognized Sid earlier in the game for his 30-goal streak, you know, tying Mary Lemieux for most in franchise history and all that kind of thing. But and even going back as far as the All-Star game, it seems like the league is trying to act like Sid and Ovi are buddies. And Ovi made the line about, or said the line about, oh, you know, and when we retire, I can't wait to just sit back and have a beer with Sid. And you wonder if deep down Sid's like, screw that. We're not having beers. You know, we're not buddies. And I'm still angry about the fact that Sid got to be a prop in the Ovechkin family moment there. So I get it. I understood why they did it, but it's not like is becoming second all time something that's worthy of recognition league wide. I mean, it's still huge. It really is. Don't get me wrong. But in your big, one of your biggest rivals rink to have to, you know, get that sort of accolade, I don't know how I feel about it. I was a little bit torn in the moment. And the crowd was too, because when they first were showing Ovi, they booed, and then they kind of realized what was going on, and then they gave him a little bit of an ovation. So I think that it's nice, and I kind of do like the mutual respect. But that said, come on, don't be soft. It's your hated rival who tried to be a knee-on-knee guy for years and a big hitter, and he tried to blow up Gino. He took Sergei Gonchar out of the 09 playoffs for a while, and all these things. There's not quite near the animus that there used to be with Alex Ovechkin, and I don't know that I like it.
It felt like ceremony for ceremony's sake, but
yes,
in the Twitter age, that's what we do now. You know, like, if they had not done anything, I wouldn't have thought twice about it. You know, if
nope,
they had just let the game go by, I wouldn't have thought twice about it. I will say this, though, from the standpoint of one franchise within the league honoring another player who was a great player in the league, I get the business element of that. And if you're a fan, don't applaud. No one's forcing you to stand up. If you don't like it and that's your own personal choice, then sit. You don't have to clap.
I completely agree. I mean, you know, it's your right to boo. It's your right to sit silently on your hands. And I guess in this scenario, I mean, in a league full of hollow gestures lately, that was another hollow gesture. And people eat the hollow gestures up. And if you're not willing to participate in hollow gestures, you're less than human. So
well,
I think
well, here's the thing, Matt. It's like, you know, this is how it works. My inclination is to say, just don't do anything. It's a rivalry game. There's still rivals. It's one of the most important games of the season. We saw how tense it got. So you could just let it go by and not do anything. But the problem is, from especially Penguins fans as they are, if the Caps didn't genuflect to Sid the next time he has a milestone coming up, we'd raise bloody hell about it. You know, like, I guess what I'm saying is whatever sense that I have about what the Penguins should or shouldn't have done is mollified by knowing how Penguins fans would react if they felt that Crosby or Malkin was the least bit slighted.
I agree with that. And the thing for me is, Tim, do you think when Sid goes to their building, I mean, I know it's not going to happen again this year, but if he had gone in there, would they be recognizing the fact that he became, you know, his franchise leader in terms of 30-goal seasons? I don't think so. I mean, and it's not something they should celebrate.
But that's a franchise mark. Like, so your big thing is
it's not a league mark. Yeah, and you're still only number two in goals. It's not like you passed Gretzky. When Gretzky gets passed, sure, we'll all bend the knee. But right now, I mean, he just became number two in goals. So, I mean, it's huge, and I appreciate it. Don't get me wrong. I didn't have a problem with it. It's just always funny when you see how they force the hand of everybody. Now, we all have to be friendly. We all have to hold hands and skip. And it never used to be that way. And now it's like we're going out of our way to show Gino with all his Russian buddies from the hated Washington Capitals having dinner. And Sid and Ovi, they have this great respect for one another. And it's okay to say maybe some of them don't like each other. And we're not allowed to say that anymore, it seems.
All right, Mets, let's wrap up with this. As far as the Penguins moving forward in this four-pack of games that we outlined before, I mentioned one of them is against Boston. The other three games, I hope they get the 6 points out of them. And then if they play the Bruins, you know, there were some people suggesting that the Bruins had peaked too early and they hit a wobbly stretch there in the middle part of March. Now they've won seven in a row again.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of ran through it there a moment ago, Tim. They're just otherworldly right now. And when they do, like, kind of dip, it's them dipping for, oh, they went 0-2-1 over a three-game stretch, or they went 1-2-2 over, you know, something like that. It's like they haven't gone on a six- or seven-gamer the way some of these teams have. If anything, they've just continued to rip off win after win after win. They did lose the rare back-to-backs to two teams that maybe they didn't take seriously when they lost to Detroit and Chicago. That was a bit of an eyebrow raiser. But sometimes I think when you're rolling the way they are, you're like, well, those teams should be easy marks, and they weren't. So that was, when I look at this, I think that was one of twice in which they lost back-to-back games this season, you know, two or more games in a row. So that, when you have that kind of season going, you haven't peaked too early. You're red hot. You're just rolling along. And I'll be curious to see how the Penguins match up with this version of them, though, because if things finish as they are right now, that would be a preview of the first round matchup, which could be very ugly for Pittsburgh. And they hung in with them in Fenway when they played at the outdoor game. They lost a close hockey game. They actually had a lead in it. And if Jari doesn't get hurt, who knows how it plays out. One thing I will say, coming down the stretch here, the Penguins have got to score more goals. I know they've started to put a couple in. But, Tim, in the month of March through 13 games, the Penguins have, as of the other day, they actually had the worst shooting percentage in the league for the month of March. They've now jumped up above Detroit, so they're second from worst at 8%.
Wow.
They've only scored, it was 498 shots, and they've been able to score 40 goals on the 498. So they're scoring at an 8% click, which is second from the bottom. Detroit's the only team worse. And as of the other day, the Penguins were 7.9%. So they got to start scoring a little more, and that's why you see them for all the analytics folks out there. Penguins have led analytically almost the entire second half of the season. They're one of the better teams in terms of all of the fancy stats, and they don't have a whole lot to show for it because they're not scoring. And I think they would do themselves some favors if they get some more traffic in front of goaltenders to take their eyes away, to make their lives a little bit more difficult in the crease, because those teams that are coming up are not going to be easy to score goals on if you play that way. If you don't get the traffic there, shooting from the outside is nice, but if you don't have traffic and create some havoc and chaos, it's not going to really work for you. One example of a game in which they looked to have dominated and didn't get rewarded enough was the Senators game just over a week ago, when Dylan Ferguson came in and looked like Vezina in net against them. They had 19 shots. They actually dropped one off. It became 18 shots in the first period. 10 of those came from their blue line. And I know we don't know exactly where the defensemen were, but it kind of speaks to the fact that they were perimeter shots. So you got to get a little better with getting high danger chances for themselves, at least in terms of getting those shots from the high slot area.
All right, so my thanks to Mets. The Pens, by the way, are plus 4,500 to win the Cup and plus 2,000 to win the East. As for the Steelers, if you're thinking futures bets, they're still plus 550 long shots to win the AFC North, as they should be. They're plus 3,000 to win the AFC. The odds seem about right to me there, but I wouldn't have them behind the Broncos, Browns, and Raiders as the odds makers do. But plus 3,000 to win the AFC sounds about right to me. And then they're plus 6,000 to win the Super Bowl. That's with the likes of the Seahawks, Panthers, Rams, and Patriots. And again, those odds sound just about right to me, despite what everyone is saying about the Steelers in free agency. All right, next week we will be coming to you from Florida. As we get set for the Frozen Four, I'll be down there for that. So make sure you're listening as we talk a little college hockey as well as more of the NHL. And we'll get some draft preview going as well with Matt Williamson, who joins me annually for that. At Breakfast with Benz, listen to our podcast and read our content at Breakfast with Benz over at Trib Live each and every week, including our draft preview all of next week. That'll do it for this week for the Pittsburgh CityCast. Back next week from Florida. brought to you by Bet Rivers. Download the app or go to BetRivers.com. Bet now from anywhere.
Thanks for listening to the Pittsburgh CityCast on the Bet Rivers Network.